Blog Talk Radio.
Africa, 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 Africa.
Ancient of Mexico, continental drifted, now she dwell in the western. Rise to the east, dip my feet in the new now. Our mounds are pyramids, what you gon' do now? The sleeping have arisen, know the world eyes by birthright. Aboriginal citadel, noble Jew had the insight. Pre-Adamic Kushites, mirror what gods look like. I self-law and master it, free national maverick. The east for you take a step, bow before the oracle. Spirit speaking plain tongue, but the lessons are allegorical. Psychophago retrieve with except what's only historical. Buried ancestral wisdom will elevate you and forward you. Waters are source primordial, birthed in royal imperials. Populated the planet with melanin individuals. Warrior bloodline passed through the DNA. Black power, black freedom, my PB5ODA.
Here to pay homage and ode to our warrior ancestor, Asafo Baba Sophie Sr., and we have the honor and privilege of paying homage with his bloodline, his spitting image, his brother, Steve Coakley Jr. So that phone number to call is 929-477-1755, again, 929-477-1755. Comments, we only got our brother for a limited time. Call this side of Africa. So it's my honor and privilege to welcome my visionary mastermind who was carrying on his father's legacy in at particular time and moment in history. Welcome back, microphone, and to the stage, Steve Coakley Jr. in the building.
What's good, brother?
It's
an honor and pleasure. Appreciate you having me, man. This is definitely long distance, but I appreciate it.
The
much
definition
love
of it, ain't it?
definitely. But it all makes
definition
sense.
Definition of long distance. Right? Yeah. How you feeling? How you feeling, brother? What's going on?
Oh, man. I feel good, man. You know, we got a little bit over here dealing with the coronavirus. Four cities are locked down in Ghana. I'm staying at Cape Coast, so where I'm at, it's not locked down. But it's been chill for me, man, working on my projects. Everything's still moving, website's still up. So, you know, we've been preparing for this, you know. People that know, they know. So that's what's up.
Right. So on this particular day, like, how are you and your fam doing? How are you, your sister, your brother, how everybody doing?
Oh, yeah, yeah, man. Fam, cool, you know. Anniversary of my father passing. Well, definitely when I got the phone call. Yeah, I got the phone call. It was from the LAPD. They told me that they had found my father dead in the Best Western Hotel. That phone call was 8 years ago today. Very close in time, too. We're actually really close in time because it was about 4:30, 4:20 Central Time. Around that time, I got that phone call. So we actually close in time as well. But the family's cool. Everybody, you know,
go ahead, bro.
Look, I can't hear you. Can you say that again?
I said, you know, nothing happened by coincidence. It's always a coexistence. So I had cut in while you were about to say something. You said family's good.
No, yeah, I was just, yeah. Family's good. Everybody's cool, man. You know, everybody in the States on lockdown. So I feel like I'm the only person I know out of all my friends that's not on lockdown. So, but I'm trying to do whatever I can to send them things and get stuff done from a distance. But that's about it on that end.
All right. So you over there by the coast, huh? What, Elmina?
Yeah. I'm in between two of the biggest slave dungeons in West Africa. You got the Elmina slave dungeon. You got the Cape Coast slave dungeon, where plenty of Africans came through there. Even where, like, I chill at, I post pictures of the water, the importance of that water, man. A lot of people died in that water. A lot of people didn't even make the trip. A lot of people was dumped in that water. And so even starting my project, the Black Think Tank Project, in this area, you know, a lot of that is harnessing that energy. And, you know, you go in those dungeons and they say the point of no return, it's like, nah, it is a return. And not only are we going to return, but we about to double down and take it all. You know, and so having the project out here just made so much sense. And it has a lot of energy and a lot of meaning behind it. And it's going to be pretty cool, especially with a lot of diasporans coming back to Africa. And this movement isn't just about people leaving America and that's it. Definitely my Black Think Tank project is based on building that invisible bridge from Ghana to America. And this being the base where they said no point of return, which is special to me. Where we're dealing with natural resources and stuff and being able to send it back to the people in the States so we all can economically empower each other and stay in tune with each other. You know, Ghana's the center of the world, so it just makes sense to have a base in the center of the world doing just that.
Word. So can we kind of get into the Black Tank, the goals, the aims, the objectives that you can share? I know you can't share, so... can we kind of get into that?
To that part one more time. I'm sorry, it's a little delay. I know this call is long, but go ahead.
Yeah, it's all good. I was talking about the Black Think Tank. Can we get into some of the reasons for the organization? I mean, some of the things that you can share, though.
Well, it would not be an organization. It's for anybody that... it's building that bridge, and I can, and the part I can share, you know, a base is a base, so you can kind of get some thinking on your mind about what it is. But also, in terms of just the economic side of it, is just having that relationship with the farmers over here and being able to provide products to the communities in different parts of the United States to our Black communities, and also empower them by being wholesalers to them so they can start their own companies and not go to the middleman. Every other race in America has some type of base they can reach back to that they can get prices really cheap things, and so they can retail it in America and empower themselves while they're there. So this think tank is a base where people can do that of color, Black people can do that, and get it straight from the source instead of being middleman. Africa and the Black people in the United States still have trades going on without being if you're Muslim or if you're Christian or if you work for the United Nations or whatever, what organization. We're no organization, no religion, just straight economics going back and forth, empowering each other, building that bridge.
Okay. All right. So how would you in the family kind of, you know, spend this day? Is it like a reflection day? Is it like, you know, like what are some of the things that y'all do on this particular day?
It's more about it's things like this. A lot of people reach out. You talking about what do people do in terms of the anniversary of this, what we do?
Right.
Okay, I just want to be clear because you're in and out. It's basically about we call each other up. We talk about different things, but a lot of it is receiving calls. We let it be a day where we deal with a lot of people that's calling. I think I probably get most of the calls, but I get calls, texts, video chats, where people just want to express something. And I'm always open to it because I love listening to the stories. You know, a lot of people, they don't really realize that, you know, when my dad had me, I was 30. I mean, he was 30 years old. And so, like, just for me being a kid, I missed out. Like, you know, you go from 30 to 52, that's me going from 0 to 22. So, you know, you miss out on a lot of stuff that when he was going on the road and stuff and different things like that. And so even at that 52, he died at 60. So I got a great chance of that last 8. But I missed out on a lot. And so when people on this day especially, you know, call me, text me, and tell me stories and stuff, I'm always happy to hear and I'm always listening because it's just so much to learn and so much experiences that I did miss out on that I just love to hear how impactful he was on people's lives. And it motivates me to do the same with my projects. Every project I choose to do, you know, I kind of keep that in the back of my mind is how impactful will it be, not just during my lifetime, but after. The project I'm working on, I want it to last 100, 200 years after me. And so everything I try to put into it is similar to what even this show is about right now. You know, you're talking about a man that passed 8 years ago, but yet, you know, it's even getting, he actually picking up more steam, you know, it's crazy. And so I learned a lot from just that alone, that how important it is to leave that legacy.
Most definitely, and Bobby, just that, you know, for many of us, you see what I'm saying? So even after us connecting and going back and, like, listening to stuff, you see what I'm saying, knowing your story, you know, two occasions that took place, you know, with the Coleman situation, even on his transition day today, you see what I'm saying? Like, there's so much more that you extrapolate from it. You see what I'm saying? And hear, you know, Baba speak, and as bold as he was, and as fierce, you understand, as he was, that presence was crazy, and, you know, still felt. And more so because a lot of things that he said came true, and there was a lot of warning, you see what I'm saying? So people can go back and listen today, and, you know, not what's going on in the time that we're in right now, you know, for a lot of things that he gave to us. So if y'all just tuning in, we're live with Steve Coke. You're live on the west side of Ghana. The phone number to call in 929-477-1755, 929-477-1755. Press 1 with your questions or your comments. I'm sure that our brother who would love to hear from y'all. And we only got him for a limited time. So if on the line now, if you have a question, you got a comment, you got something you want to share, press number 1 and we can bring you in. So, yeah. I think cutting a hole in your fence and confusion on the battlefield is like top 2 reverberators for me. You know what I'm saying? Those two, I mean, like, those two I can't watch without getting misty-eyed. You understand what I'm saying? Because it got me kind of crazy on how we see, you know, such greatness you know, leave us, protect the greats among us, and we allow these suckers to roam around, and we give them quarter and our, you know, our resources and all kinds of shit. You understand what I'm saying? Like, it kind of had me crazy a little bit, just, you know, and looking at it, you know, and the silence with a responsibility to keep it going. You see what I'm saying? So it's with you. You would see it somewhere. You understand what I'm saying? No matter what. But when our warriors, there ain't no doubt no warrior. You see what I'm saying? So we continue on to pushing and moving. You see what I'm saying? So, you know, Pop's legacy will be alive. Continue to spread it. And others get a hold of that information and they continue to spread it as well.
Definitely.
And you said, I saw a post, you got new titles, you know what I'm saying? You got some more information, some more lectures.
Well, man, what happened is, man, I was able to link up with a brother, man, who had, he had DVDs, well, he had VHS tapes that was never put on YouTube, never seen in a while from a lot of people. And he had reached out to me, and he really wanted to get it to me. And, you know, me being in Africa, I try my best to, like, when I get something like that, I try to add them, you know, to the website to make it available for everybody. And so it was, man, it was, I recently just got them like last week, and I'm like, let me post this, you know, right before the anniversary. I added 14 more lectures to the website. And so it's lectures I haven't even seen. I only seen like 3 of them out of the 14. And so I'm excited to get it when they, you know, when they get this international cargo going again, it can be shipped to me, but I'm very excited to see it. So I added 14 lectures on themoringamatrix.com, www.themoringamatrix.com. 14 new lectures, $10 each. Great lectures. Powerful, not seen on YouTube.
And you know I need them joints, so already.
For sure.
Whoa. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to hold you too long. I just wanted to make sure we got a moment to, you know, hear your thoughts. You know, it's always love to you. You know, we family. Shout out to my, shout out to your sister, shout out to your brother, man. You know what I'm saying? Let me take a call before you go. Calling in from area code 323, area code 323. On live, Duke Knowledge Radio. Now it's one online. Steve Kobe.
Greetings. This is Siddiqui Papar.
Peace, brother. Siddiqui, what's
sure.
going on
How
with
you,
legend?
Bro? Peace.
What's going on, brother?
You the legend, man. You the
right. He just snuck in real cool too. Like, yeah, you know what I'm saying?
No, I appreciate you, man, having the brother on. I appreciate both of y'all. Steve, I just want to tell you I'm proud of you, brother. I know it has to be difficult to walk in the shoes and be the son of a person who is considered to be one of the greatest, if not the greatest, teachers that we've had in the last century. So I applaud you, man, because you know what your journey is. You're living it, and it might be different per se than your father's particular journey, but it's in that same spirit, it's in that same energy, it's in that same love for our people, and it's from a Pan-Africanist perspective. So, brother, I'm proud of you. Man, meeting you was an honor. So just so you know, I honor you, I revere you. You know, all the time I spent with your father, I see many of those characteristics in you, just spending that time with you. And that's why I wanted to take you to Leimert Park when you were out here, because your father spent a lot of time in Leimert Park. For those who may not know, Leimert Park is like the arts mecca in Los Angeles. So your father spent a lot of time there. It's a very cultural, so you get a lot of African drumming and things of that nature. So it was a drum circle. So every Sunday would be a drum circle, and your father was there often when he was in town. And we spent a lot of time together there. And a lot of people in Los Angeles have spent a lot of time with him there. He was really, really with the people, and people need to know that about your father. He was with the people. So his analysis, his teachings, his research, all the things that he was doing definitely was for the people. And he always had the people in mind and a concern for the people. Just an amazing, amazing, amazing mind and person. I mean, even when I look at the things that I'm doing, so much of it is a reflection of, you know, Steve and just how amazing he was. Because just so people understand, so when you're with Steve, you know, just so, yeah, it's fun and it's all that, right? But at the same time, it's always teaching. If it's something that he can impart in you, he's going to do that. So, you know, we had that type of a relationship. And again, I'm just grateful. I'm grateful that the DNA is still here as well, and that the DNA is just doing some amazing things on his own right. And, you know, for people listening, you know, just allow, you know, Steve Jr. to be himself and to do what he's here to do and to live out his vision and not compare him to his father or expect him to do the things that his father did. He's his own man. Allow him to be his own man. Allow him to grow. Allow him to expand. Allow him to bring to humanity what he's going to bring to humanity. And I'll stop there, man, because I can go on, brother, about Steve Coakley, man.
Man, for sure, man. I appreciate those comments. You already know I got the ultimate respect for you. When I came down to L.A., you gathered the brothers up. You showed me around, man. I never forget that, man. That's always a place in my heart, man. It felt like, it just felt right, you know. And I'm forever grateful for that, too, man. Especially, you know, and being a mentor, being able to reach out to you and ask you for advice and run things through you just to get that advice back. I appreciate that, man, so much, man. And the brothers in L.A., man. Just much love to you guys, man. Yeah, I couldn't ask for anything more than that, man. That's just super love from y'all.
Oh, absolutely, man. And I know I can speak on behalf of the brothers in L.A., you know, just how much love it is for your father, because as far as we're concerned, he's still here. He still lives through all of us. You know, many of his teachings, many of the ways that he researched and things of that nature. Like, he really imparted a lot in us. And I really want people to know that, and that's what this is about. So when we talk about standing on the shoulders of our ancestors, be very clear, you have to be connected to those ancestors when they're actually here, when they're present. You have to be connected. You have to, you know, be able to be humble and to take those lessons and understand that those lessons are going to be better for you and your people in the long run. And that's the one thing that I truly respect and admire about Steve. Steve will call me after I do an interview or a lecture or something and just tell me straight up what I need to do better and how to do it. So it's those things that I appreciate. Like, we can always have, you know, that type of dialogue or any type of dialogue. And, you know, the respect was always there. And, you know, we always understood, first and foremost, it was a mission. Quick story. When I did my first book, I met with Steve in Leimert Park. He took that time out, and we went through the entire book. Before it was a book, it was just on my computer. And we went page by page. And for me, based on the information I was dealing with in that book at that time, it was important that I got the checks, right, and the balances from Steve. So when we went through the book, and you know Steve, so Steve is looking through the book, and he's like, okay, NWO, okay, the Bilderbergs, okay, the Rothschilds, racism, white, you know, Steve is going in doing what he does, check, you know, he's going through the book, check, okay. But that was important for me because Steve, as far as research was concerned at that time, was the person that I had the direct contact with outside of Oshawa Kwesi. But Steve was here in Los Angeles. So that was huge because I understood, okay, I'm on point. If Steve Coakley is saying this is on point, I'm on point. So that was an important time for me as far as me putting the knowledge out in that form. And I'm sure other people have, you know, tons of stories about Steve and the effect that he had on them from a standpoint of scholarship and research. Just how to move as well, right? Just how to move in this system and to deal with certain aspects of this system that you're going to have to deal with if you consider yourself a scholar or a revolutionary or whatever it is that's for our people. It's a certain way that you have to move. Another quick thing. So I had a venue that he used to come to and speak at in Carson, called Shabazz Good Foods. So we would bring him in to speak, and we was standing outside. And so this is a place where you can get food as well. So we had, you know, everything going on, him speaking, the art, all of that. And we just outside talking, you know, and he was like, yeah, brother. And, you know, he's looking inside, and he's like, yeah, so did you get anything to eat? You know, I'm like, yeah, man, you know, I ate or whatever. And he was like, oh, okay. And he was like, you see him cook it? Now, it's not that he didn't trust the brothers, right? But it was a lesson. He was like, so did you see the food cook? And I was like, well, no. And he was like, well, brother, anytime you're eating somewhere, you want to make sure you can see the food being prepared. Like, it's just those little lessons. Like, these are little security lessons, right, that he would impart in those that, of course, he saw, obviously. He didn't just give it to anybody.
Definitely not.
But it's lessons like that. And, you know, those type of lessons, you know, you take with you as you're moving, how you're moving. As well, like the internet, people got to understand, Steve was doing that high-level, high science research he was doing. He wasn't using the internet. Maybe towards the end, he started dealing with the computer. But he mainly did not deal with the internet or computers with his research. He dealt with books, newspapers, things of that nature. So he did research on a whole nother level without having access to all this technology. And that's important to know, because 99.9% of people that's out here researching today can't do the type of research that he did, even having the internet and access to all these different type of medias and things of that nature. So, you know, Steve, man, phenomenal, just phenomenal. I talk about him all the time. Normally when I'm doing interviews and things of that nature, normally the first thing I do is I give reverence and praise to the ancestors, as well as my teachers and things of that nature. So I'm always making sure his name is being revered and uplifted. I'm always telling people, you need to go study this brother's research. If you consider yourself in the lineage of a master teacher or a scholar or a Jegna or a Sesh or whatever term that we're using, this is a brother whose research you have to be familiar with and on top of in order to move forward in whatever it is that you're doing. That's the foundation, and you have to have him as part of that foundation. So, again, man, I'm just, you know, on a day like today, it's joyful for me because I have so many memories. I can see the brother like he was here yesterday. I could hear his voice like he was here yesterday. You know, so I'm just grateful to have, you know, had the opportunity and the time to spend all the time being with him and to learn what I was able to learn, you know, from him, and to carry this torch just like his son is doing, and, you know, just continue this work that has to be done.
Definitely, man. Appreciate the comments and the stories, man. Love it. Much love.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And thank you, brother, again, for having Steve Coakley Jr. on, man. It's just, again, it's an honor, you know, just to have been in the presence of this brother, just to see that the work that he's doing. I know his father is proud. I know it.
Well, definitely, definitely. Our conversation is long overdue, so maybe one of these days to spend some time and we get to hear your story. I know you saw what I did with Rashid, and you know, my mother in Germany, you know, was the last time I saw her physically. You know, I brought her to Germany for this 2-day lecture, and I told the world that the world would know me through my mother. You know, so if y'all see a small snippet of that lecture with my mother and Black Dot, to see Brother Rich, Black Magic 363. That was my gift to the world, you know, and the bootleggers got it. You know, I had lost contact with it. I was to buy it from somebody who was selling it, you know, just so I could get back, because, you know, that's a moment for me to see my mother. That was the first time I had a chance to introduce my mother. You know, I've seen her on it many places, and, you know, sometimes we take our loved ones for granted, you know what I mean? So that's my little part right there. One day I'll hook that up. So you got any closing remarks before we get up out of here, Steve?
No, it's all good, man. I'm enjoying this moment, man. You know, sometimes you prepare for things, and sometimes it may take months, weeks, years, and you've been waiting for a moment like this, not because you wish death on people, not because you wish harm and sickness on the world, but you want to see how people react. It's like a fire alarm, you know, and I'm treating it as such. Even though people dying, I'm not trying to be insensitive to the people that are dying, but, like, if we talk that revolution talk, if we talk that freedom talk, if we talk that empowerment talk, people got to die. And so people will die. And to see how people are reacting, being in their homes, things that they really need, how they really feel, their trust in their religion, their trust in their word. Everybody claims, not everybody, but a lot of people claim inner peace. It's not looking real inner peaceful right now.
Right.
But this is an alarm that we can see this. This is like a pulse. And I'm enjoying studying the pulse right now and looking at how different countries are reacting to this. It's a global thing. And so me being in Ghana, somewhere that's not locked down, and then it's considered the center of the world where the longitude and latitude equals zero, I'm able to equally look around the globe and just see what's going on. Somewhat of a fair shot of the news and media, but not really, you know. CNN still owns companies here. Just a better look at it, man, globally. And I'm learning a whole lot from people's actions instead of the words. And so this is a big time right now, man. This is a good time. This is a good time to be living. This is history. And a lot of lessons will be made out of this. You're talking about only the strong survive. This is it. This is the time. And let's see who comes out of this strong and ready to move the culture forward. And so I'm excited, man. I'm very excited. Like, every day I'm actually excited. I know a lot of people seeing a death toll and the different things, but I'm seeing, like, I'm looking at it differently, man. I see it differently. But we definitely have to prepare. My project, the think tank, was more needed than I even thought. On the other side, outside of economics, but being able to reach people, our people across the globe, to be able to have contacts, to build bases where people, if they need to leave a place, they can come to. All this is through communication of one place. And so this is what's being built. This is what's needed. I know a lot of people argue about, you know, like, we're indigenous. And of course, I believe Africans were all over the world before, you know, before Columbus, pre-everything. But we need bases. And theory, I think we need bases in Africa. Everybody's rushing to Africa but us, in terms of the numbers-wise. We're still low in numbers in terms of moving. And so I think it makes sense for us to have bases in Africa, different countries, not just Ghana, but in different countries, so we can have something where we connect with somebody that looks like us, to be at a source. And us, when things like this happen, we still can ship things, cargo and different things, like my stuff on my website, but be able to reach people and get products from Africa straight to the people in our communities and neighborhoods. I just think it's important, man. And I had that dialogue with anybody, and then ask them, you know, what if you don't have that, then what do you have if you have no base? Even Black people on a global scale really don't have a seat nowhere. Like, they don't have no representation. even Nigeria has representation. Ghana has representation. These different countries have representation. But our people in the States, on a global scale, not trying to, I'm not talking about having no seat at the United Nations. I'm not talking about being able to get a loan from IMF or World Bank. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about just in general of having some agreements with countries, being able to move forward, you know, having trade agreements. We don't have that representation for our race that's in the United States of America that most people call black people. And that's something that I'm trying to think of and put together in terms of my black think tank. It's with what I can share on the radio.
Mr. Deacon, we had lost you. What you done? Did you have something else before we wrap it up?
No, I'm cool. I'm cool, brother. I appreciate you having me, man. Keep doing what you're doing, man. I love to stay in tune with what you got going on, man. The culture should appreciate you. I appreciate you, man. You keeping people in touch, keeping the communications alive during a fearful time. So I appreciate you, brother. I'm sorry the connection not too well. I'm literally a minute from the ocean. The ocean's right outside my window, and so it's not enough poles and it's bad service. As long as we don't get those 5G poles, we good. But
right.
Maybe we can get some 3G poles, you know, or something around here. But it's all good, bro. Thank you for having me.
All right. All love. I'm going to end off one of my favorite excerpts, Confusion on the Battlefield.
Brother lectures on a multiple number of topics, secret societies, New World Order, Bouvet, I'm sure all of y'all are familiar with him. He has appeared on different talk shows like on CNN, Crossfire, and a number of others. He's talked at Howard University, Hampton University, Florida A&M, and the list goes on. I've had a chance to see the brother on video before. This is my first time seeing him in person speaking. And
let's see here now. This must not be you. Not you connected to this? No. Okay. I appreciate you Africans coming out to the Black Consciousness Conference so that we could advance your knowledge of information that hopefully, if you're concerned, will allow you to be more effective in your desire to make change for African people. And whenever the brother Steve is given a call for him to share what it is that he knows, everyone knows from what angle, from what temperament, from what standard of fact base that the brother shares from. And this is what I'm known for. Far more infamous than famous. In many cases, an analysis of the enemy will put you at odds with our leadership. Because our leadership has failed to teach their members who the key honkies are that run the world because they negotiate with them. And part of their effectiveness as a leader depends upon their ability to contain their membership. And one of the ways you do that is you skew one simple analysis. Who are we fighting against? And yes, like in the title, that is why there is confusion on the battlefield. Where I might stand up and fight the Rockefeller Foundation, I question its right to build and fund a constituency for Africa project. The Carnegie Foundation, the Ford Foundation, I condemn their right to organize and fund a constituency for Africa, because any analysis of who adversely harmed Africa, you'd come up with Rockefeller, Rhodes, Carnegie, Rothschild. But it's confusion on the battlefield if C. Payne Lucas becomes the executive director of the enemy's operation to cover its own ass for some shame it produced. And now the perpetrator has financed the response to perpetration, which in fact suggests that's only continuation. So I get in trouble when the analysis comes, because the whole set is dependent upon confusion in the battlefield. Who are we fighting against? usually when you bring that up, someone will suggest to you, we already know who they are. They will. And you have to think carefully about what they say, because you're witnessing that thing that you're against. You will draw it out like golden seal. Like I got a little abscess, a little jaw swollen up over here, putting golden seal on the swelling to hope it sucks the pus right out. And that will happen when you start that level of intense focus on the enemy, because the leadership won't level with the membership. And that put me at odds with the leadership. They don't come to Coakley program, I don't care what city you're in, even though they damn need the lesson. Brother has invested everything he ever had to demand and command a better focus on who these people are, to widen our ability to influence more people till we have enough to make it happen. It will happen. It will happen with you or without you. That's why we come in the spirit of the Bogard. That's how they got it. That's how we're going to get it back. We're going to be factual. We're going to be right. But we're going to be strong. We're going to make change. And confidence is breeded through information. Knowledge. I know, therefore, shit, I'm going to go do this shit. A thermometer of capability suggests that what I saw in New York at the Million Youth March let me know that though it isn't organized, the army will materialize at a moment's notice. Because the army is buried deep in the victim's heart. The victims are tired, but the leadership ain't offered the direct lesson. Yes, it isn't really their responsibility, but shit, you got to beat Newsweek. Time names them somebody special. The news makes them somebody important. Every magazine and book and newspaper article suggests that they should be flaunted. So it's hard getting that out. So that means that it will only provoke itself on a person-to-person basis, which is not bad. If you couldn't be on the television and you couldn't be on the radio, damn, it ain't bad to be person to person, because that's the highest level of convincing you could give. So now it is, how many can you get to? Times, how many can you get to? When people tell me, brother, you know you really ain't a brother till you write a book. I said, brother, those people go through those tapes and they find those books, they eat those books up, and then they go get another tape and another tape, and I know they ain't read the book, they got the book. I got the book, but I know they ain't read the book, because behavior is an indicator of the knowledge. I know you know when I see you do. Now, okay, so we can get some possum involved. When we had the Million Youth March in New York, on Friday night at 5:30 in the evening, we didn't have but about $2,000 to do some things like put a sound system for 7 blocks long and to ensure that system and the engineers and the other things that had to be done. And we didn't have no money. I mean, we all kicked in. It didn't come to a bunch of shit. They picked up the phone and called Master P. Oh, yeah, so he just looking down at the pile of his money, he wires $140,000 in 19 minutes. And by 10 minutes to 6, we beat the bell Friday at 6 to go on the street. $140,000. The reason I brought that up was the possum, because if you read into the media, when the whites went to him, what are you doing financing this thing? He said, I didn't know I was financing that. Thought I was sending money to build a playground in Harlem. But for those that you will read it on a direct level, Khaled talked to him 9 times in the last 5 hours before the program, and there's no doubt he meant to do what he did. But don't get caught in the possum that may be played in the public to throw off the enemy. But since we don't talk there no way, he sent that across the deadlines. You know, you only know it's right when it's direct. Check.
Check
mean I understand, we can move on. Check?
Check.
All right. As a brother, I say humbly as a brother, I'm very proud of the work that we have done across this country without promotion or finance, that we have communicated a focus on an enemy in spite of those who have resisted the computation.
You see, if everybody submits to computation and we say, who is enemy? Everybody bring it in the room. And at the end of this, these will be the top 15 focuses on what is the enemy. That's computation leads to conclusion. Now, you'll watch. People will, we don't need to do this. They will. You will watch them repudiate the 1 plus 1 equal 2. Now, again, two things we need. It's 10 things. It's a tape they call it the plan. It's 10 things. A plebiscite on what are we for? What do we want? If we were to build a revolution tomorrow and everybody had to sign up, damn, it got to be something on the menu to make you want to eat it. And it must be something that reflects what you want. And so that's a plebiscite. When Harold Washington became the mayor of Chicago, there was no doubt that he would be the only black candidate because of the plebiscite. A group of credible people called Jellers came to the mill, Lew Palmer and others, to be the agreed upon arbitrator of the contest, 50 names on a sheet of paper, sent all over the black neighborhood, to the laundromats, to the grocery stores, door to door, ward to ward, precinct to precinct. They come back. 10 people I selected from the 50. From those 10, 3 were selected. From those 3, 1 was selected. And that became Harold Washington. And when they proposed to him to be the man, he said, well, you got to register 50,000 voters and raise $1 million. They raised 200, strike, they raised $6 million and registered 276,000 voters. But Harold Washington was a manifestation of black folks in Chicago's desire for change. And when they murdered him, it only let me know that it is not the ability to snatch the office that makes one a power activator. It is the ability to maintain and protect those who you appoint for those positions. And after they won, they went to sleep and left him vulnerable to other forces. Sometimes this is done more overtly through the Kennedy assassination, the Malcolm X assassination. Damn, it wasn't but a couple of years they tried to kill Khalid Mohammed right there at University of California, Riverside.
Right.
Assassination is a tool of political advancement. Only problem is it's generally hunkies doing it. That's a problem. When will the cadre develop where people desire to sacrifice themselves on behalf of black liberation? Maybe you need to treat them good 2, 3, 4 years to build and train them to be expert in compelling change. And that when their moment comes, they stand up on behalf of all of us and live and die for a reason rather than for no reason at all. In many of these other places around the world, people's ability for liberation was based upon the people's for sacrifice. Now, you might as well start sacrificing for liberation because you are tolerant on behalf of white liberation. Tolerant. And tolerant is harder on your physical body than sacrifice. Sacrifice is, I do this because I want to. Tolerance is, I hate fucking going to work. Who in here got a job? The word on the street is, if you got a job, you're fucked. I don't mean to belittle those with jobs. Some of those jobs are important. But it's an indicator that there are other priorities than liberation. Will liberation happen on the weekend, at the conference, or over the Christmas vacation? Nah. Liberation is drop what you're doing, shit, let's get it on.
Yeah.
In a very strategic, systematic way that at the conclusion of a series of events means change. And I suggest to you as a focus, just as a brother, this is the foundation of the brother's projection to African people, that the foundation of change in America is not the murdering of the president or the vice president or the speaker of the house. It is the destruction of the document that unites the states that makes this a country, the Constitution. Let me hear you say it. Right? The financial system is based upon confidence. The people who tie up the people's money to make sure education and housing and other things don't happen are Congress people. Yeah, they tell you, we just ain't heard of them. We ain't put the 3D on to see through the dialogue. They say it straight up. Said the president is a liar. Somebody said, hey, that's the president. That's what the presidents do. We say, hey, that's cool. See, that ain't about nothing. That's what presidents do. They lie. But I say, hey, lying, all right. I ain't into it one way or another. I like the hunkies to tie each other up, take time, slapping hunky left, slapping hunky right. That gives you time to make up your mind.
Mm.
They don't have time to do you. But right now, they're trying to drop what they're doing so that they can giddy on up to you, because on the down low level, they know your ass really getting ready to kick some butt.
Mm.
And they know that because the thermometers around the country will tell them that. Those intelligence communities, and they're here tonight, and they're going to measure your temperament. Is Brother Mukasa in here? I know he's out around the hallway, but Black Power Brother. And one of the things that was one of the most awesome things about the moment in New York was that when you holler Black Power to the people and you watch little children, you watch them fists bumping and you see the intensity with the assertion in the children. I got some films here sometime over the period. While I'm in town, I'll have an opportunity to show you much of this film that we have, because we'll have to communicate to you what it was. They will never do it.
Hmm.
But that's all right. That's an all right thing or a demand to have to put on those who have something to share. But let's go back to this Constitution. This thing represents a force of an enemy. One thing that is not computed in African people's desire for liberation is a computation on oath takers. Oath takers, people who swore their ass to uphold some secrets with some other lesser lights, who together represent a force who operate in a clandestine way, usually to take advantage of people who are not so well organized. If a Mason wrote the law, and then Masons become law enforcement, county sheriffs, LAPD, prison guards, on up the law enforcement ladder, they become the preservers of the law that their Mason brother wrote. And then come those who submit to the Mason law, who want the privilege of being above the law when confronted with other Masons. That's an unfair advantage to those who are not members. And it subverts the law that they claim to preserve. That's an accusation. That's something in the revolution that will command the confidence that we will do something that is awfully awesome. As far as a computation on oath takers, in one sense, Freemasonry being a force. Only thing I'm going to spend time telling you, and I don't have many audio tapes with me. I'll be making them over the days of being here. I do have some. But one of the tapes deals with the concept of Freemasons coming forth. Francis Bacon developing a fraudulent story to trick hunkies to come from Europe to America, suggesting to them that someplace in America was evidence of white superiority. Of course, it was a lie. You know that. But that was to trick them over here. And when those earlier ones got beat for being invaders, it was hard tricking more of them, so they created a specific legend called Atlantis. And there in Georgia, Oglethorpe called back to the king and put the first Mason thing on the so-called shore. A lot of streets are called Oglethorpe all over America in honor of his excursion on behalf of George, who he then named the state Georgia, and the area of the legend Atlanta. It was a part of a myth game. Hunkies are big on the myth game. They create stories to supplement the facts of their existence. One of the things we know for sure, and don't you ever buckle on this, the hunky has no known origin. Now, when I say that, I'm telling you that the top scholars in white academia have still been unable to link their population to others. There is no link. So they've developed myths. The monkey, then the white man. 8888 white man. Adam and Eve, creation, right? But you saw in the X-Files movie, they was down in the earth as a cave dweller, and something else bit them who was down there with them. And together they formed a bond called the white race. And never in their history have they ever been proven to be fair and equal about anything. And one of the things we're going to talk about after Oath Takers is we're going to talk about those who believe in God. Nothing wrong with those who believe in God or practice religion, but they have a tendency to have a skewed analysis of the white man. Just because God is in the picture, they fuck up the analysis on the evil.
They do.
And we're going to have to deal with this. We've got to clean this up to go forward. Deeply looking at the psychology of African people to see if we can translate victory. It's a sustained amount of activity for a sustained amount of time that will lead to a safe, certain amount of conclusions that will make change. And then you must have allies in other countries to protect your game that you will make here. It's an honor that you could be born next to the most brutal and beastly race of people ever to develop in the history of the world. This honky right here in America is the king of all of that. And you're right at it, within striking distance of it. One of the strategies we pull in response to this is there are 40 state capitals, Atlanta, Des Moines, Iowa, Tallahassee, Florida. You start thinking the state capitals where on certain days black people going to ring those capitals arm in arm just to let other black people know we within striking distance. Don't you let nobody tell you you on some impossible mission to make change. That's the enemy right there. Because when you ask them for computation, you say they ain't even thought it out, so how are they so profound in their conclusions? And then you must know and strike them. I warn you, if you act again without computation, I will suggest you are a perpetrator, and as such, there's something we do to them. You will not be allowed to perpetrate without proof, even marginal, plausible. Better come with something. Okay, those hunkies that then, as a few people, the stage, the people on the stage were looking at the country, and together they wrote a law that adversely impacted all the rest of the people in the chairs. Fundamentally, that is a violation of every known universal principle. There is no grant to the minority to do anything that adversely affects the majority. That's a violation. That's a crime. That's law breaking on the principle of universal understanding. So, as a basis for change or revolution, that document is considered the organization of a criminal enterprise. Called America. 13 of them made the first sealing up the bad deal. And everybody else got affected adversely because they had taken the whole thing. I only say that as a base discussion, for when you're pressed to the wall and someone will tell you that you have to be ashamed of fighting against this honky, you just go back to the beginning and remind them it was phony from the jump. And any other point that they want to prove they was less than phony, you say undo what you started and then we can start talking. And that's why those people who are original people get caught up in deals over casinos and other payouts, so that when we challenge this hunk, he goes, I paid them all. So we be getting to them, look, resist some of this cheese they passing, because we might get the whole shit by one way or another. Now, so these Freemasons, strategy, these Freemasons who penetrate the society, and I can tell you from articles, endangered conspirators, Freemasons who used to be blamed for everything now seem almost quaint. Can a youth movement rescue them? Time magazine, May 25th, 98, advocating for the youth to come support the law preservers because they are in jeopardy of extinction. The Kabbalah, story promoting the Kabbalah to get little white people of the Jewish religion to get into a mystery system of understanding to get their youth to organize. Now, isn't it ironic that this was the year of the youth who were organizing, and simultaneously the hunkies are trying to get their youth in the vessels to stand guard for the resurrection? Now, on the home front, in Britain, you know, hunky is how America go, American go. There's this historic alliance. In terms of strategy, this article suggests something that's very significant. In Britain, they found out that some of the key criminal enterprises were done by men who happened to also be the grandmaster of their lodge. But also within the lodge were the bailiffs and the sheriffs and the police and the judges, and as such, the judges could not rule against the Grand Master. So criminal enterprises were developing that were protected by the lodge, so the Home Secretary at Britain have suggested that Masons better now voluntarily register with the government. All Masons register with the government. Now, for tying up a group of oath takers who are not necessarily on our side, fuck, do it. I say do it here too. Tie their asses up. Make them all register. Let you know how dense their penetration of the professionalism, especially law enforcement, is. Let you see that. Now, the Home Secretary is like the president in Britain. He said that if he doesn't get voluntary compliance, the government will pass a law compelling them to reveal lodge membership. Because they found out they couldn't stop crime until they broke